anteriormente, em Mal Posso Esperar.
E é isto, malta. Eu estou muito entusiasmado com o Joe Pera. Este entusiasmo ainda vai no início, porque ainda me falta ver pelo menos duas temporadas da série dele. E é isso. Pode ser que haja uma surpresa para os ouvintes deste podcast mais à frente, relacionados com este tema, mas não vou revelar já, pode não acontecer. Mas fica aqui um pequeno teaser.
Bom, malta, conforme eu tinha dito no episódio 5 sobre o Joe Pera, era possível trazer um episódio, ter aqui uma surpresa para vocês. E, portanto, isto vai ser o primeiro episódio de Mal Posso Esperar com um convidado, em que eu falo com o Joe Pera, que supostamente tínhamos filmar isto ao vivo quando eu estava cá em Lisboa. Não conseguimos, infelizmente, mas ele simpaticamente aceitou fazer aqui a entrevista por Zoom. E, portanto, é isto. Isto, no fundo, é bem... É meio uma entrevista, meio um episódio normal. Eu falo um bocadinho com ele no início e depois cada um de nós trouxe um tema que nos entusiasmou durante esta semana. Espero que gostem e que se divirtam, tanto como eu me diverti a gravar isto. Ah, o episódio vai ser em inglês, convém avisar. Espero que gostem da mesma. Um abraço e até já.
A telenovela, o Guilherme mandou a vê-la, gostou tanto dela, mal posso esperar. Um filme, um novo bar, uma bela mozarela, vem lá a sequela, mal posso esperar, mal posso esperar.
Hi, welcome everyone. Today I'm joined by a very special guest. I have the comedian and star of the Adult Swim HBO Max show, Joe Pera Talks With You. Joe Pera, thank you for coming, Joe.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Guilherme.
Thank you for coming to this obscure little Portuguese podcast. I think that your career is will benefit much from it, for increasing your Portuguese fan base, so I appreciate you coming in.
That'd be nice. I do like Portugal a lot, and I had a good time doing the show there this summer. So it'd be
You were here. You were here a few months ago. Did you have fun here? Did you enjoy your time here? What did you get up to?
Oh yeah, it was a blast. I spent as much time walking around eating the seafood, and then did the show. I was only there for a couple of days this time, but it was. Beautiful. I had such a good time.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Did you still use the Ronaldo jersey that you bought while you were here? Have you since you left here, have you found another use for it, or do you think
I've been waiting?
It just terminated when you used it on the set.
No, it's a great jersey. For 10 euro, I thought it was a really nice deal, and the audience seemed to enjoy it. But I haven't found the occasion to wear a Ronaldo jersey since I've been back in New York.
I think that you'll be able to find it another use. But yeah, you know, it's a $10 practical joke. So I think it went. The public really seemed to enjoy that. So I think it served its purpose already.
Yeah, it's fun to pander sometimes. It's not good.
Portuguese people are very easy to pander to. If you just say obrigado and pastel de nata, people will go crazy. I have just been in Nós Alive, that's like the big summer festival in Portugal, and people go absolutely wild anytime an artist just does obrigado, and people go crazy.
That's it?
Crazy for it. Yeah, that's it. We don't require much love as a country from foreigners.
Wow. So if Obrigado does it, the Ronaldo jersey must have been way...
Yeah, it was overkill. We went completely... so far as it's been like almost 3 months since you've been here, and I still remember it and wanted to ask you about it in the first question of the podcast. So as you can see, it struck quite the impression on your... European audience in Portugal, at least.
Yeah.
Did you find the many differences? Did you find many differences between the European crowds that you played? Did you in the different countries in that part of the tour?
Yes and no. It was. It's hard to group them all together because every show was different. Mm. But there were. I had. I don't know when. Performing in English, it feels like a lot of the audiences that came out to see me as an American comedian were familiar with other American comedy. And I think the people that came out had seen my television show or were familiar with my work already. So it felt like I didn't have to do as much establishing or laying groundwork at the beginning of the set, and people were on board and forgiving of any cultural errors that I may have made. So in that way, they didn't seem, they were, it felt like a familiar audience, even though I was overseas, which was nice. I like the show at Maxime in Lisbon was,
yeah,
it had its own special elements. It was hard because I feel like part of the audience wasn't sure whether it was all right to respond to the crowd work. And yeah. That was interesting. By the end, I feel like everybody did, but there was a moment just because there's not, I don't know. It seemed like there were some Portuguese comedians there and people who had seen a lot of stand-up, but it also felt like for some it was their first stand-up comedy show.
Yeah.
So I feel like that was the story of like the Portuguese show in Lisbon was just kind of like letting the audience know that it was okay to participate in the set.
I definitely noticed that by the end people were getting a lot more comfortable. And I think it was a very mixed crowd in terms of the experience of watching stand-up. I think there was like a mix of people that knew about you and your style of comedy, and people were like some foreigners that were in maybe they were at the Maxime Hotel near the bar and thought, oh, cool, someone that speaks my language, I'm going to go check it out. Smallest percentage, of course. But I think people had a lot of fun. And you always have you always like to interact with people. Even in your show, you ask questions directly to the camera.
Yeah.
And I personally feel that this connection that like I respond to you in my head every time and I'm having this dialogue and you seem to understand me, which is very weird, and I don't know how you exactly do it. It's like I'm watching a children's cartoon for adults. That's, you know, I know that I gain nothing in answering you, but I still do. I cannot help you when you ask me how I'm doing, if I'm sitting down correctly, or if I what type of chair am I in, and yeah, stuff like that.
Well, yeah, we wanted to make a show that was a little bit slower and gave the audiences a little time to participate on their own, and leaving those gaps and asking questions that are fun to think about and kind of like include the audience's thought process in the show. Because a lot of the questions that I ask on the show is stuff I don't know the answer to or I'm trying to figure out on my own. So I want to bring the audience in on the experience of figuring it out with me. So it's not like, I guess the difference during the show is I knew the answer at the live show of like what was going on, and we were more playing a game of what everybody thought was going to happen. That was interesting.
Yeah, that's very fun when people start guessing, what you did on Conan, that two people to ask how tall you think your son is, and people start guessing. Yeah, that's very like, and then you in the live shows you have instant answers, right? You have there you don't have to think what the audience might be responding at home. You have the direct input from people.
Right. So I guess the other interesting thing about the European shows was that I guess squirrels aren't as prominent, or there's not squirrels all over Europe the same way there are in the United States. And I had no idea I was going to have to get into conversations about the red squirrels versus gray squirrels, and the gray squirrels being an invasive species. And also, you know, I think like Copenhagen and Oslo, they didn't have squirrels at all. So it was very weird to explain.
Yeah, to bring people up to speed on squirrels live.
I don't know. Maybe those culturally small-minded of me, but I just thought that squirrels were everywhere, kind of like, I don't know, yeah. rats or
in Portugal
or
we freak
flies.
Out every time we see a squirrel. We're not used to it at all.
Oh wow, that's such a difference from New York, where they're everywhere. Yeah. They're bothering you for food.
They're very used to humans and stuff. You also recently taped your special in Brooklyn,
yeah.
which I'm very excited about. And now you're probably in the post-production / editing process. How involved are you with that part? Do you delegate or are you hands-on working on it? And do you enjoy it?
The director, Marty Scousbo, he directed my TV show, directed the special. And we work very closely together and kind of approach it, things together throughout edit. But he knows kind of a lot of the preferences now, so it's nice that we don't even have to discuss certain choices. But it's nice when you're editing, you know, any type of comedy. It's the same as having an audience. Comedy is kind of between people and... I don't know, you probably have jokes that have been very funny to you, but then when it hits an audience, you realize, oh, maybe I wasn't on the right track, so you gotta regroup. So it's kind of like, it's fun making each other laugh, watching it and sharing ideas. And it's in that same way, it feels like the comedy is between us and... you know, still going off. It's not an audience reaction, but it's Marty's reaction, or he'll show me a cut of something, and if we're both laughing at it, then we know it's good. And it's a lot of gut instinct, but it's based on just putting our heads together and making each other laugh.
Yeah, it's very good to find someone that you have that kind of chemistry with and that you trust their input so much that if they laugh, you know, it brings you a degree of comfort that allows you to, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
This is good to go.
Very
lucky.
If
he enjoyed it and he's my target audience, like
yeah.
I have a few friends that if I know that if they enjoy it, they are my target audience. So it must go well
yeah.
For the people that I want to. So
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, that's a good thing. You also play Fern, a character in Pixar's new movie Elemental, which comes out here in Portugal on July 13.
Nice.
I know you did some animated voice work before for a few TV shows like F is for Family.
Yeah.
But since your voice and vocabulary are so intertwined with your comedic style, is it hard for you to voice an animated character which is not written by you or your team or something like that?
A little bit. When I see Paige, it's nice. A lot of times, like I did Bob's Burgers and F is for Family. The writers are very good in trying to write in my voice. So, and I know what they want. Sometimes they're just kind of like, do your regular thing. But for Fern, it was a little tougher because the director had some ideas that it was nice the amount of recording time that they had. It was different than other places that I had done voiceover for before. We had a lot of time in it. They didn't even send me the full script because they don't want the Pixar secrets to get out. So I didn't see a lot of it until I arrived. And then they showed me an image of the character when I got there. So it was hard to prepare. And then me and the director kind of went back and forth with different ideas, and I was doing it a bunch of different ways and kind of just wanted to make sure that they spent, I think, 7 years making the movie and they spent hours and hours designing the character. I just wanted to make sure that they were happy with how it sounded and kind of matching their vision. It was, they definitely, I think, had me in mind for a while, but just that I feel like when I'm working on other people's stuff, I want to make sure that it lives up to their vision and I can help them make that happen as opposed to trying to do too much of my own spin on it.
Yeah, have you seen the final product yet?
Yeah, it's very fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm also, yeah, I wonder who played is it going to be released in English in
Portugal. Yeah, we usually have both versions coming out. We have the dubbed version and the original one. So yeah, people in Portugal will be able to hear you voicing this character.
Nice.
Okay, so now in theme with the podcast, I brought a topic that I'm excited about, that excited me about this week. And I'm going to share it with you. And then if you want, you can share something that has excited you in the last few days or a few weeks.
Sure.
And my topic is the electric toothbrush, because I think it's a very controversial topic, although it doesn't seem like that at first, because people who use electric toothbrushes are very defensive of it, while people who don't judge people who use electric toothbrushes, because why would you spend the extra money and hurt the environment and all that stuff just to do something that you can do by hand? And I have recently bought an electric toothbrush, and my life has improved greatly.
How so?
Because I think that I'm very... I have poor motor skills in general, so... If I can, like, iron out, remove myself from the equation as much as possible,
yeah.
My experience is better. I can do, if part of the process is automated, then it works better for me. If I'm, as long as I'm not involved, as possible. So the electric toothbrush does a lot of the work for me, which is better than the work that I would do alone, basically. And that applies to multiple areas of my life, not just... brushing my teeth. Do you have an electric toothbrush or do you have a regular one?
My dentist recommended getting one, and I tried it out for a while, but then on tour I just didn't want to keep on. It was kind of bulky to pack, and you kind of have to keep it charged, so I just switched back to a regular one because it's so much easier to bring along when if you forget it. I don't know. It felt like too much trying to remember to charge my toothbrush or bring it someplace. Charger
so you can brush your teeth.
Yeah.
It's a little bit obnoxious. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that you're back at home, did you switch back or are you still with the regular one?
With the regular one. It's just, I don't know. It's less complicated to me. I guess you feel your teeth are cleaner?
I feel a lot cleaner when I finish, because mine has a little vibration that tells me when it's done. It's weird, but it's like you're supposed to do like inside of the teeth, then outside of the bottom part, and then top part the same. And it vibrates when you're supposed to switch to the other part. So that helps me time how much time do I need to spend on each area of the teeth. So that helps me feel that I've done my job correctly brushing my teeth, which sometimes I'm left in doubt. Be like, I'm spitting out the toothpaste and I'm thinking, did I do this correctly or not? Did I manage to comply with the dental hygiene standards that I'm supposed to? Because it's such high maintenance teeth. It's like, in terms of body parts, demands so much from you. It's like you don't associate teeth with high maintenance, but it's very high maintenance.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe we take it for granted. No, I do take it for granted. I don't know. I don't know how old you are, but if, you know, even 100 years ago, we would probably be on, our teeth would have rotted away by now.
Yeah. Or,
so it's something to be thankful for, but... I don't know.
Because are you? Because I think what most people think about electric toothbrushes versus the normal ones is the same way that I think about like smart fridges and stuff like that, which I don't find useful at all. Like, you know what the smart fridge does? It basically allows you to have a camera inside the fridge that you can access with your phone. If you're like at the grocery store and you want to. Be like, oh, do I have milk or something? You just can press your phone and it shows you the inside of your fridge. That thing I don't find useful at all. And I think that's what most people think that are electric toothbrushes versus the regular ones. I wouldn't like spend like an extra €1,000 or dollars to be able to check the camera inside my own fridge.
No, I feel like fridge technology is kind of, they're pushing past what is actually useful.
Yeah.
And to charge more. But I don't know. I feel like the electric toothbrush is a little more practical. At least I've heard it does a lot. But it's supposed to be a lot better. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel so. I feel it changed a little bit my life, and now I'm much more confident in my brushing skills. And I, because of that, I went a little bit into the history of toothbrushes in general.
Oh, nice.
And I found out that, you know, people used all kind of stuff to clean their teeth back in the day. They're like twigs from Mesopotamia times that were used to clean the teeth, like twigs, bird feathers, animal bones, and porcupine quills were all used to take care of your teeth even then. Like,
interesting. Even in
like the birth of civilization, people were already taking care of it, even though, you know, and you do find skulls, and most skulls still have their teeth on, so I think that's a good job on them.
What were they using as toothpaste back then? Do you remember?
I don't think they had toothpaste. They just used like a type of chew sticks that they were like basically just bite down wood and stuff like that and try to remove the plaque from the teeth with it.
So same as like those dog treats that.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Wow. The same principle. And I read a story that the. In the UK, the first person called William Addis that commercialized made like the first mass produced toothbrush was in jail for causing a riot. And while he was in prison, he decided that they brushed the prisoner's teeth with a rag with salt. With something like a stick, rag, and salt. That's what they used for prisoners. And he thought that was ineffective. And that could be improved. So he used like a small bone from a meal and like put little holes in it and then just like sew some bristle, some tufts. So in order to create a toothbrush. And when he got out, he started his toothbrushing company and it got really successful because of that.
Hey, good for him. That's very interesting. Do you know what he was in jail for?
For causing a riot. I don't know which type of riot. maybe was protesting for better health and hygiene conditions for prisoners, and then he got put in jail, and then he was like, fine, I'll do it myself, and started selling those inside the prison.
Yeah.
I don't know what he did. But yeah, so that sent me on a little bit of a search in order for me to be able in discussions when people judge me for using an electric toothbrush, I can say like, did you know that people were probably against, like people who had chew sticks probably resented people who already had the bone, chicken bone toothbrush. The same way. Oh, the stick works perfectly. I don't know what you're talking about. So
yeah,
that always makes me laugh. Like if there was a person that was against fridges because they would ruin the experience of salting the meat, stuff like that. That always makes me laugh when I think about it.
Yeah. How often has it been coming up? Or have you been talking with people every about time your electric toothbrush?
I like bring my electric toothbrush around. People give me the eye. And I started realizing this was a controversial topic by then. And so because for me, it was just an upgrade. You know, I used the normal toothbrush and now I have an electric toothbrush, which is the same but does the job better.
And wow. And your friends, I know that's interesting that is what gets them going. That they resent you for having an electric toothbrush for some reason.
Yeah, they just don't find the purpose for it, and they're like, I can't believe. But also, people describe me as having that sort of personality that has electric toothbrush, and I don't know how to think about that.
That's really funny. Yeah, I don't know if that's a compliment, but that is.
Yeah, I'm still figuring it out. I'm still thinking about it and trying to understand what exactly that means.
Are you into gadgets in other parts of your life?
Yeah, I like to read about it more than I like to use them, which is also weird. I understand, but I usually just I'm very curious about gadgets and I don't know if you count it as a gadget, but Apple's new VR, not VR, but like augmented reality glasses was, I kind of became really interested about that and read everything about that. I don't know if I'm ever going to buy one, but it made me read a lot about it. So yeah, I'm interested in it, but I don't end up buying them.
Yeah.
What about you?
Sometimes. I find that when I buy gadgets, though, most of them end up not being used. So I don't, I try to resist. What did I get? I guess my latest gadget. I had a sore back for a while, so I got one of those heating pads.
Yeah.
And this one wraps around your shoulders, like, and buttons in the front. So it looks
like a tight hug.
It looks a little sad, but it's really nice. And the problem is better than other heating pads because they kind of, you have to either lean against something if you're going to put them on your back, or they're hard to keep in place. So I feel like adding a couple buttons to a heating pad is really, that's pretty exciting to me. And that I've been using that a lot, but
You find it? Was it like a targeted ad or something? Or was it recommended by a doctor or something?
Do I need something to use to relieve the sore muscles? So just started. I just chose that one and it was a good one. I was like, this is going to be a little embarrassing. Even if the only person that knows I'm using it is me. To have a heating pad that buttons, it's not like a, I don't know. Nothing to brag.
It's an uneasy feeling. Like, you know you have it on, but don't other people... Don't. I had this really weird feeling the other day. It's not exactly the same, but I had a backpack on.
Mm-hmm.
And inside the backpack, I had another smaller backpack. And that was all that I'm carrying. Instead of like bringing... I needed to bring two backpacks. So I decided instead of bringing two empty backpacks, I would put one inside the other.
Yeah.
And I felt really uncomfortable because I felt like an idiot walking with just a backpack with another backpack on it. And I knew that I was doing that. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Especially if nobody else knows, because it's like your little secret. Like,
yeah,
nobody knows that I've got another backpack inside this backpack. Yeah.
And inside of that one, nothing. It's just a backpack inside a backpack. And then,
You gotta keep going. You need an even smaller backpack to put in there.
Yeah, like a Russian doll of backpacks.
You imagine how confident you would feel, or just like, I don't know, if you have like four miniature backpacks that you're carrying around at all times. How powerful.
For me, it got paranoid since I had two, but I think if I had four, I would become really confident. Yeah, I think you're right. It's like, I have this insane thing going on that people don't know about it and are just passing me by on the street without knowing.
Yeah, you could walk by everybody and just think, you have no idea how deep this goes on my back.
Yeah. So do you have anything going on in your life or that you found out that has excited you in the last few weeks or days?
I'm trying to think. The one thing that I've had the most fun thinking about is we've been editing my stand-up special. I should think of something outside of work, but
No, work is okay if you want to go work.
So for the stand-up special, the cinematographer wanted to put like a overhead camera at the top of the stage that could also... kind of like it was remote controlled and it could point out at the crowd and give us an overhead shot of the crowd. And I thought I would never use that angle. Who wants to watch a stand-up special from directly above?
Yeah, like bird's eye view of it.
It doesn't make sense. If my approach to comedy and the show has always been do it as straightforward and simply as possible and have a high overhead shot. Kind of doesn't fit into that, but Marty was showing me the footage, and basically it's an overhead shot of everyone in the audience, and you can watch basically everybody react to every individual joke and moment. And a couple of friends were sitting in the back, and they came out to support the show, but you know, comedians are tough laughers sometimes.
Yeah.
But it was so, I was having a blast just watching the whole audience in the overhead. And like throughout the show, like even people I didn't know, you get to know them and like how they respond to certain jokes, what they found funny, how often they're drinking their drink. One woman was pulling out her cell phone and texting. So it was like a whole different experience. I don't think most of it will make the special, but it's made me think like, what is going on in this one woman's life that she needs to text during a filmed comedy show? Doesn't she imagine that, you know, we could see her with all the cameras around? But that's, but you know, it's fun to watch the audience members in long shots. You kind of can make up a story, kind of like just people watching. But you go, and then it's very gratifying when you, you know, you see the people who aren't laughing at all, which I don't know, it hurts a little bit, but you realize some people enjoy comedy shows that way. So it's fun to watch and then see what does make them laugh.
Yeah, yeah. You see a person in the third row that hasn't laughed once, and then you like start observing him. Okay, let's see where I get you, and let's see where you break.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I found that very interesting because you do it from stage. If somebody's not laughing in the audience, it becomes your kind of goal. You don't care if everybody else is laughing. It becomes your goal to try and get that one final person to kind of give in to the show and really get a good laugh out of them. But so that was, it was funny. It's just funny to watch people watch something too. I don't know. Maybe this is, I don't know. It's a little voyeuristic.
But I can certainly see the appeal, because when you're, at least, I don't know what's your experience, but when I'm performing, I try to look at the audience, but not too much, because I get a little bit nervous. So I just try to focus on a random focal point in the middle of, and I can only like usually just see the first two or three rows. I don't see what the people in the back are, what their posture is like to my comedy. So it must be really interesting to see the whole audience as a whole reacting and see what like, because sometimes you can hear someone laugh really hard when no one else laughed and see, okay, I think, and I know that I got someone in there, but I don't know who that person is or what they're like. And to be able to see who is that person with an overhead camera.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yes. And who that person is. And I guess it's almost, it creates a, I don't know if anything, it breaks down what is this large audience that you can hardly see into a bunch of real people, each of whom have kind of had a lot of going on in their day, have their own preferences and things they find funny. And, you know, it's an audience of individuals, which it's not always easy to see from the stage. And you'd think, everybody's got their own, they're together as an audience, sure, but, and a lot of, try and get them in sync and laughing at the same time, but it's neat to see everybody's got their own little story in the audience. I guess that's what I like, not the voyeuristic, but to know that everybody is an individual and has interesting things going on, thinking about where they're going after the show, where they came from before the show, if they're stressed out. It's, you know, that's, it felt like we were had a fun time establishing some of like individual groups at the show at Maxime and getting to know who they were, where they came from. And this was just kind of like, it's another degree of that, watching them watch the comedy and just seeing them as individuals as opposed to a full audience, which is, like I said, is, I feel that now that I'm performing in some larger rooms, it's, you kind of lose that. When you're performing at a nice intimate venue, you get to kind of interact and think about who's there, why, and talk with people more.
I really like watching stuff live because when you get back from that, you have no option but to talk about what you just saw. You know, and you always have a little walk from the theater or something, wherever you went to see it. And sometimes with streaming, and even if you're watching something with someone at home, you won't talk about it as much as you will if you're going to have a drive or a walk after you saw something live. That will always be the topic of conversation, and will make always people go a little more in depth than of what they just saw than just seeing something at home. And because there's other stuff happening. If you're just going back from the place that you just watch the show, then you, I don't know, at least that's what I think happens with me. I don't know if you have the same experience or not.
Yeah, I agree. It's nice. I mean, the streaming services are meant to try and get you to put on the next thing as fast as possible, and I'm guilty of that. But when you go to the movies or a live show, yeah, you've got that walk afterwards where you're
have free to digest. You should, for your next special, you should just buy a bunch of drones and just follow people after the show, and you just see where they go after, and always like with the bird's eye view of the person, and see where, if they go home, if they go drinking, if they go and have a nice dinner after.
Yeah, it's I thought when I saw that one woman texting in the audience, I thought it would be funny to do like a promo or supplement to the special where I just email her and then try and like meet up and be like, what was I doing wrong with the show? Why were you texting? What did I do? What can I do better to keep your interest?
Did you have a medical emergency or were you just bored?
Yeah, I just ask and find out, and I thought that would be interesting.
Yeah, I hope you can track her down.
Sorry, I'm a little creepy between that. Yeah, but yeah, well, I was curious.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking a little bit with me and sharing something you're excited about. I had a great time talking with you. And when can we expect to see your special? Do you have a date planned yet? Or
sometime this fall, I think.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'll be on the lookout for that. Thank you. I had a great time.
Yeah, same. Thanks. Don't let them make fun of you for your toothbrush too much.
I'll try my best. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Bye, Jeremy.
Bye.
A telenovela, o Guilherme mandou a vê-la, gostou tanto dela. Mal posso esperar um filme, um novo bar, uma bela mozarela, vem lá a sequela. Mal posso esperar, mal posso esperar.